What's up, everyone? We're back. Welcome to Dr. Lee Unhinged. I'm Dr. Shaw.
I'm Dr. Maxfield.
Welcome back. I am on the road. We promised going forward that we, instead of having delays or gaps in the podcast, that we would start shooting on the go. So I'm in Colorado right now and shooting on the go. So we'll see how this turns out and whether or not we get the same quality. We still have the good mic. So hopefully everything turns out as well as we hope it does.
Yeah, I'm actually not concerned at all. I'm super excited about this on the go shooting because I don't think people care about quality, honestly. Like the voice quality when they're listening, I think they care about, but I think they like the chaos. So let's say I'm in the park. I'm in France. I'm in Texas. I don't know where you are. You're in the club. You know, whatever Dr. Shaw does.
Do I spend a lot of time in the club? Is that where you can find me?
I'm not sure where you go.
I don't go to the club. To be clear to everyone who's listening, I'm not like chronically at the club by any means.
Wherever you are on a 7 p.m. on a Friday night. Anyway, I'm excited because it brings a little chaos, it brings a little fun. And on that note, this podcast, we will talk about life updates. Where in the world is Dr. Shaw? I'm going to drop some news on the candidates. No one knows what that is, but that's a chess tournament. It's just interesting and going on right now. We'll talk about whole body deodorant. Do you need it? Do you smell all over? Should you be spraying and applying all over? We'll talk about some of the top mistakes that people and influencers are doing when applying skincare on social media. And we might talk about some of the problems with short form content creation.
Yeah, what I'm really excited about is this list of top mistakes put together that influencers are making when they make content on social media regarding skincare. So I think this is a really fun topic because I have a lot of strong opinions on the rules of skincare and really if they should be applied or not. So I'm really excited for that segment. Let's jump into quick life updates. I am joining you from Colorado, visiting my lab, one of my labs actually, on a new product that we're developing that's coming soon, actually. And so visited the lab there, and there's so much nuance to all of this, but everything seems to be going smoothly. So I'll keep you all updated there. Any life updates from you, Dr. Maxfield?
No, we're just making moves on some of the big projects we have going on here. Thankfully, closing a lot of doors, so life is getting a little better. I'm watching a lot of chess. The candidates are going on worldwide. This is one of the largest chess tournaments out there, and I'm extremely engaged. I know we have a lot of listeners in India, and some of the top players in the world, some of the youngest top players in the world are from India, and they are crushing it as expected. So I wanted to know if that resonates with any of you, because I'm very attentive and excitedly watching these games.
I wonder how much crossover there is in our audience. And we were going to put a poll up about this, like related to something completely different. But I'm very interested in the crossover of interests and hobbies within our audience. Like, how many people who are interested in skincare also are interested in chess or even pet videos? How many of you have a pet? How many of you are interested in sports? How many of you play video games? How many of you are into gardening? This type of crossover, I think, would be really interested to see what type of cross hobbies people have.
I'm super interested too. And maybe we just need to commit to throwing some of these polls out there just to see what's going on. I would love to know what everyone's up to.
If you're listening on YouTube, there's a comment section. Feel free to comment what your main hobby is. Could be skincare, but also something unskincare that you do that's a major hobby for you. I would be just curious to know where our audience, what other hobbies our audience has. Dr. Maxfield, you wanted to say that Colorado is very dry. Right?
Oh, it's terribly dry. So I grew up in Colorado. I left there I moved there for medical school. So I was there most of my life and it's so dry. Anytime I go back now, my skin is completely acclimated to a humid environment. And so when I go by, I feel just, it's barren. Like the humidity is negative 10 and it feels as dry as the wasteland you're walking on. Colorado is named the green colorful or the colorful state. That's its moniker. It is not colorful. It is either green or brown. And the majority of Colorado is brown. And so every time I go back, my skin struggles.
That's super interesting. So I didn't notice it to be horribly. I guess I did notice my skin was a little bit drier, but I've also been testing out skincare products all day. So I'm heavily moisturized right now. So maybe I haven't experienced this. I will note the first thing I noticed when I got out of the airport, because my first time ever being to Colorado, the first thing I noticed was that it was incredibly bright outside, mm-hmm. like shockingly bright. Like, you know, and I spend part of my time in Miami, so I'm obviously where the sun lives. And the sun is not nearly as bright in Miami as it is in Colorado. So it probably has something to do with the altitude in general, right?
Oh, yeah. So Colorado, we've been fortunate to live in a lot of sunny places with good weather. Colorado and Florida are two of the sunniest states in the world. But Colorado's sun is harsh. It is crisp. It is in your face, on your face. And it is bright. Very bright. All
right. So what's your top moisturizer for dry skin, just to kick it off?
It's still got to be the La Roche-Posay Triple Moisturizing Cream, formerly Lipikar AP Balm Plus. It's extremely hydrating, has a good body. It leaves like a non-greasy film that protects your skin for a long time. I can't say enough. It's an amazing body moisturizer that's good enough for your face.
Easy, straightforward. Okay, I like it. And do you have a product of the day?
Product of the day. That was my
That'll be your product of the day, then, I guess. All right, let's hop into.
Wait, what about you? What's your
product of the day?
No, your dry skin.
My dry skin moisturizer is going to always be probably the Skin Fix Triple Lipid Peptide Cream. And it's just, you know, once you figure out the skincare products that you like, especially the basics, cleansers, moisturizers, and a lot of times sunscreens, and we try a lot of different products, so we're probably an exception to this, but for me, like when I find something I really like, I kind of stick with it. And Skin Fix Triple Lipid Peptide has been something that I've stuck with for a long time now. Now they've changed the formula a few times, but I haven't noticed a material difference when they change the formula. So they must be making minor changes, but they came out with this new BL3 ingredient that they have, ingredient story that they've added now to the formula, but I haven't noticed any difference in the actual performance of the formula. So overall, formula I still love and stick with, especially in dry weather conditions.
Good. That's a beauty.
All right. So let's talk about whole body deodorant, because this is now a topic of the town. And you know, what's really interesting to me is, first of all, the question, do you need a whole body deodorant rather than just something for your armpits? That's going to be question number one. But also, interestingly, this idea of like new categories of skincare products, as if we don't already have enough things that we need and buy. It's almost like, you know, they create these new categories that make you feel like, okay, I need to now, not only do I need a deodorant for my armpits, but I also now need a deodorant for my whole body. And do I need a moisturizer just for my elbow?
We're back to that category. Is this the moisturizer to your elbow, this deodorant for your feet? We've actually talked about this topic before. It was probably one of the first podcasts we've ever done. It was somewhere back then. And it was like, do you need a whole body deodorant? What do you think of this? And it was basically like, my take was, okay, well, logically, do you sweat everywhere? And you don't have apocrine glands everywhere. So you probably don't need a whole body deodorant everywhere. That was my take. I can't quite remember what yours was. It was probably similarly measured, but I still would say that a person does not need to apply a deodorant, specifically something that masks odor, very deliberate wording there, to your whole body. I will say though, I think there is an unmet need, in at least in terms of idea, for using or having a deodorant available for certain other areas like the feet and the groin. And the reason I say that is I do remember actually in high school, and I guess this is like my hygiene coming to light, like body odor was something we just didn't talk about in my family. And so all of this, I was like learning on the fly and probably not in a timely manner. And I remember like your shoes stink and your socks stink and your feet stink. And you're like, what is happening? Like this never happened before. Your armpits stink. And yes, groins and booties stink too. And so there are areas, especially those with medical conditions as well, like HS or something like that, or infections, pitted keratolysis, a bacterial infection of the feet. There are conditions where I think a person would actually want and benefit from some odor protection or maybe masking, although I think that's certainly less favorable or less ideal.
So I sort of agree with you that there are areas outside of the armpits that definitely need attention when it comes to odor, especially those areas that are high in apocrine glands, armpit, groin, underboob, as they're calling it online. even on the websites that I'm referring to. That's what they're calling that area. So armpits, groin, and feet, all those areas definitely produce a lot of odor that is probably worth masking or hiding some way, or at least cleaning those areas a lot more thoroughly. Now, my biggest complaint probably with some of these products that I'm seeing online and some of these trends and some of these ads that I'm seeing online for these products is that they're specifically marketed as whole body deodorants. Mm-hmm. But if you go to their websites or if you read the products carefully, they really mean it's more targeted towards these hot spots. So on the websites, it will specifically say, and I'm looking at both the Dove website and the Secret whole body deodorant spray, but it says used for pits, privates, underboobs, and feet. And then it says our whole body deodorant can be used on various areas of the body. But it doesn't, when you read that, right? Like it literally says on the front of the package, like whole body deodorant, right? So the expectation, I think, from the consumer, and I don't think this is an unreasonable expectation, is that this is meant to be sprayed over the entire body. And if you look at the ingredient lists on these whole body deodorants, they're essentially just fragrance, right? They're not antiperspirant deodorants, meaning they don't have anything that's going to block your sweat glands and prevent the sweat, but they really are just masking sweat. So they're really just whole body scents. So it'd be no different than, in my opinion, no different than just spraying your cologne or your perfume over your entire body as far as masking scent goes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think, and because of that, I wanted to dislike these even more, because again, my first take is that, oh, it's a whole body deodorant. It sounds unnecessary, but it is weird. You go to the website, it's like, actually you would use it in the areas that I would want to use it. I think the trick is going to be finding one that does have some sort of functional purpose and not only just masking, because I agree, you just spray that Ralph Lauren perfume that everyone got onto all those areas. And it's exactly the same thing. But I'd like to see some sort of antibacterial. I mean, throw glycolic acid at a low concentration in some of there, maybe some starch, make it absorbing. That'd be great. You put it into a spray, you slap it on your feet, your underboob, as you say, your groin. And I would actually back that product if it was functional and they communicated clearly that it should be used in specific areas. I'm all for it.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you, especially the feet. You know, I think the feet are pretty unique scenario where moisture, sweat, you know, wearing the same shoes, everything getting trapped in there not only traps bacteria that can produce odor, but it also traps yeast and fungus that can produce odor. So I do think it's important to try to keep that area clean somehow. And there are a lot of people that develop all kinds of conditions on the feet that are relevant, like you mentioned. So I do like the idea of this, but at the same time, you know, we've talked about this before, this hack, this idea that cleaning these areas with something that's antibacterial, antiseptic, can reduce a lot of this odor. And I do think that this really does hold true. So if you were to clean your feet, your armpits, your groin, your underboob area with chlorhexidine or benzoyl peroxide, especially if you notice that you are producing more odor than normal, then it would probably help to eliminate a lot of that scent. So that could keep it from you having to apply like a fragrance directly to your body over your entire body or under, even in this hot spots, right? So I don't know. My thought is that, you know, I do see the idea of like targeting hot spots, but I don't know if this is necessarily the best way to do so, especially because these are not antiperspirants.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move. They need to move it forward a bit. They're starting the conversation, but I don't think they fully executed yet.
And don't use this all over your body.
Yeah, please.
To be clear.
Please don't do that. So moving on from whole body deodorant, this is a conversation and a topic around mistakes influencers are making when they're showing you how to put on their skincare. And these are the people that are going to be teaching you how to put on your skincare. And up to 2/3 of people are making mistakes. So this is a list, top 10 list. The first one on the list is actually pulling on the skin while applying the product.
So pulling on the skin when applying the product. So this is a common thing that I see a lot of skincare experts, I would say, or skincare enthusiasts criticizing other like hobbyists, I would say, or people who just are applying beauty products. They'll criticize them for the way that they apply products and specifically about the dragging process. Now, they'll even criticize people about the direction in which they apply products. So instead of it, like, not only are they applying it too rough and harsh, but if you're not applying from the inside of the face to the outside of the face, if you're not applying skincare on the neck from the bottom of the neck to the top of the neck, people will say that you're not applying it correctly and that you're dragging the skin in the wrong direction. I think that this probably has such a minimal impact on your skin quality that it's probably not worth worrying about unless you're using something, and we've talked about this before, makeup wipes around the eyes. Like when you're using really harsh maneuvers on the eyes and causing a lot of inflammation, especially with a product that's already naturally pretty irritating, I do think it can make a difference. But the direction or how you apply the skin to the skin with your fingertips, I don't think makes a material difference to the quality of your skin.
I agree. And I will take it one step further. I don't care at all. And I say that very reasonably because when we talk about skincare to people in the skincare community, there's like a baseline level of education and information. We all know what we're doing to some extent. We're all familiar with the topic. When we see people in the real world, the majority of our patients and the majority of people you'll interact with don't care. It's a win if they get a product to face. So if product meets face, that's a win. It meets the standard for acne. If you get acne ingredients onto your face consistently on a daily basis, that's a huge win. You're 90% of the way there, if not 99% of the way there. After that, the direction in which you apply your skincare, sure, it can be helpful if you take it that step further. But for the majority of people with their dedicated skincare problems, it is going to make a minuscule, if not negligible, difference.
Correct. I completely agree with you. Now, the second one that we see on this list is skipping or using products in the wrong order. Now, I think this is an interesting thing because what determines like what the correct order is? You know, we've kind of talked about this before, but there really is no correct order to apply skincare products. There's like a lot of hypotheses on the correct order to apply skincare products. And we always say either, you know, thinnest to thickest. The reason why is, you know, if you have a really occlusive ointment like Vaseline and you apply it before you apply your toner or your salicylic acid product from Paula's Choice, there's a good chance it will have trouble penetrating through that thick ointment layer into the skin. And so it kind of makes sense to go from thinnest to thickest. Vitamin C versus hyaluronic acid, which goes first? Well, vitamin C is a finicky ingredient. It kind of makes sense that you might want to apply it first to dry skin. But these are all really hypotheses. None of these things have actually been tested on people. The order has never been shown to impact the quality or the efficacy of your products in any way. You know, there are some dogma that I think would probably hold true. Like you'd want sunscreen to be the last step before makeup. You know, that kind of makes a lot of sense. You know, it's the last step. It's going to protect your skin. But beyond that, you know, I really don't think there's a lot of like correct order. And skipping, other than skipping sunscreen, there's really nothing that's like necessary in a skincare routine. So I don't know that this even makes a lot of sense to me. And I don't think there are standard rules that I would say everyone has to follow for the correct order of products.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it's interesting. I think the layering conversation actually sparked our whole channel's like side trail down into this no rules saga, because layering is something where it is. There's no rules. There's no studies. There's no standard formulation for every product. Therefore, it's going to interact with every other product the same way. And so for us, it became this very personalized, very product individual focus on, okay, are there hard set things that, like you mentioned, Dr. Shah, just like maybe a couple things? There might be two or three things that are good foundational rules when it comes to layering your products. After that, again, we're kind of left like, well, does it matter that much? Maybe a little bit, but really, who knows?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Now, there are ingredients that inactivate other ingredients, and you can watch our full YouTube video on products that you can't mix. But otherwise, you know, I don't really think that there's a correct order. And I actually think that it can be counterproductive to make videos that criticize people on the order of their skincare because it discourages them from even doing skincare altogether, right? They're like, oh, I don't know the rules. I don't know the rules of engagement. So like, why even engage at all, right? So I think if you're doing skincare at all, you're probably making good choices. And as long as you're wearing sunscreen, you get a pass in my book. So the next one is not applying skincare to the chest or the neck. So what are our thoughts on this? Is this a mistake that people are making?
Yeah, so all of a sudden I'm like a big rule follower and a fan of this one. I think this is a huge mistake that people are making. We see this every day. Again, like there's so much of our decisions that are based off of the patients we see in front of us. Like even if you, again, we say it all the time, you look at a cosmetic study, 30 patients, solid study. Look at us in real life. I mean, we are seeing that a week, if not five times that amount. And so one of the most common problems people face as they go through life is they are trying to take care of the rest of their skin because they've neglected it and only focused on their face. So I'm a huge fan of people spending more time bringing their skincare down from their face to their neck and their chest, and therefore not reactively trying to undo decades of damage, which truthfully cannot be completely undone.
I just had the shocking epiphany after you said that. I never contextualized studies like that. A good skincare study, and a lot of the studies we make our decisions are based on 30 patients, sometimes 60 patients. And we'll see five times as many of those patients in a week as a dermatologist. So not only are we dealing with data that we're reading in these clinical studies that are well controlled, but we're also dealing with like this plethora of anecdote that almost becomes like expertise, right, over a period of time. That's like an incredible volume of patient and data points that we're working off of. I never really even like contextualized it in that order, but you're 100% right. I look at the chest and the neck of somebody and the back of the hands of people who don't take care of those areas, but do a really good job on the face. I mean, marked difference. So 100%, you should be bringing your skincare down to the chest or the neck and the hands, at least sunscreen, but a lot of your ingredients play well in those areas. Now the neck can be a little bit more sensitive than the rest of the face, but you can still apply a lot of the products in those areas and it will make a huge difference. These are very difficult areas to treat. And, you know, Dr. Maxfield can attest to this. We see a lot of skin cancers on the chest area, especially in people that get a lot of sun exposure, wear a lot of low cut tops. And it's just due to all that cumulative sun damage over time.
That's it. So I love rule number three. All of a sudden, like I said, go live by the rules, play by the rules, all the rules. Rules matter. Number three, huge fan of take care of chest and neck. And number four, I think this one's interesting. It's putting unclean fingers into product jars. And my question, how do you know their fingers are not clean? Like, what is your expectation? Are you saying that everyone has to like wash their hands on camera before touching a product? That sounds insane to me.
This is a good point. Like, how do you know, right, that they're not clean? Well, you know, fingers in general, like even washed, you know, especially with nails and whatnot, are not always clean per se. But I see your point here. And I also would like to challenge this idea to some extent, because I do think it's something maybe we hyper focus on, because a lot of people don't like products in jars for that very reason. They think, well, these are exposed to air and light, which I think is valid for some ingredient stability. But also, like, because you're putting your fingers in those products, like, are you not now contaminating that product? And is that contamination not going to be bad for your skin? And I think it's a valid concern. But one, think about any jar product you have. Do you have any cleansers in jars?
No.
So you only have moisturizers and treatments and maybe eye creams and
balms
and cleansing balms, right? That are in jars, right? Now, with cleansing being the first step in the routine, oftentimes the products that are not cleansers, that are in jars, you will have already washed your hands because you have washed your face. So technically almost it's assumed in most products other than a cleansing balm, which is a good point, which is why the pharmacy cleansing balm comes with a spatula. Barring a cleansing balm that you're dipping your fingers in, most of the time your hands have already gotten one wash if you think about it.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's nice, nice catch. The other side of this too, I've thought about this a lot with, because people, when their complaints, especially with the L'Oreal eye product, is it turns darker. Maybe there's like, we get flecks of skin into the product and you're like, oh, your product sits on your shelf for months and months and months and it's going to brew bacteria. Products have preservatives. And there's also the expectation when you buy a product that you're going to use it within a reasonable period of time. So the preservatives will last and protect against some amount of contamination, and that contamination is expected. Like a good formulator and all these formulators know that this is not a sterile environment in which you're applying your products. So if you are practicing routine hygiene And if you were washing your face, like Dr. Shaw mentioned, and if you're going to use your product within a reasonable period of time and it's not sitting on your shelf and you're not using it a year or 2 years later, I am confident that the majority of your skincare products are going to be able to handle that, and you're not going to be making your skin worse by applying them with your finger.
Right. Now, all products go through micro testing. So they do test it to make sure that these products don't grow any organisms, essentially, before they're sold. So now those products do have limited exposure to like human interaction. They are usually open vat. There are usually people who are touching them, but they're usually gloves, goggles, hairnet, generally is the conditions under which these are made and then tested for micro. So they do show that there's no like really ingredient contaminations. You're not growing any colonies of bacteria. And like you mentioned, all of these products have, unless they're some of these preservative-free products, but if a product has water in it, it will invariably have a preservative in it to prevent infections from growing. So in general, most products can withstand any bacterial, fungus, yeast overgrowth due to these preservatives, which are really strong, unless it's completely preservative-free product, in which case they tend to go bad quickly. And then most products have a period after opening, a PAO on them, which is how long those products are good after opening. It's usually anywhere from 6 months to 12 months, and sometimes 2 years, sometimes even up to 3 years. So usually that means that the preservative has been tested for stability, micro-testing, even after a very long period of use.
I love it. Such good information. And this is, I think, where you being a brand owner and developer comes into such play, because you have such a good understanding of the consumer side and the product development side that you can like bridge that communication gap to. I love it. The number five, run number five, washing. Okay. So washing with too cold or too hot water. Again, this is kind of a weird one to me. Like who is observing the water temperature in these videos and making the conclusion too hot or too cold? I don't know. This seems a little bit finicky to me too.
Yeah, this is a little suspicious, because how did they observe this, right? They said they went across popular TikToks, and then they used a software to basically like analyze like the mistakes that were being made. And then they came up with like a percentage of mistakes being made. They said that 30% of creators are washing with too hot or too cold of water. And I don't know, like, and like there is literally no way they can possibly know that. There's literally no way that they could possibly know that, right? So I'm starting to get a little skeptical of this list, like you mentioned. But there is some truth.
It gets,
you know,
better.
Cold water, you know, cold water probably, you know, doesn't probably make a huge difference, but too hot water certainly can strip away a lot of your oils.
Yeah.
And so lukewarm water is the preferred temperature to wash your face at, but I'm not really sure how they came up with this 30% concentration.
Yeah, me either. So we'll say just don't scald your face, don't burn your face, just be moderate with your temperatures. The next one, which may or may not have some validity, layering too many products at once. What do you think?
Well, I don't know how they determined like too many. I think we all have our theories. Like my whole thing is like, you know, I really like 3-step skincare routines, maximum 4-step skincare routines, which would mean like 2 actives and a moisturizer afterwards. I think generally when I watch TikTok videos of, you know, the tween creators, especially, doing, you know, 10, 12 step skincare routines, I think that is too much. I definitely think that's too much. I mean, that's the thesis of Remedy, actually, is like, people are doing too much. Let's do the work for you. Let's put it all in one product. Let's stabilize it. Let's make sure it's going to work for you. We put all these products into one formula to solve your skin problems. That was like the thesis behind the brand. So I'm like a big skinimalism person. So I do believe less products, more products that are doing more for you is better. What's the limit? Like, what would you say is the limit of steps to layer on top of each other? So this is after cleansing. How many products would you layer on each other before you said, this is too much?
I don't know. I think it's just up to you. Like, how much time do you have? I met with an editor from a magazine. We're just doing one of the PR events, and I think she had a 20-step skincare routine that she did every single day. It took her 2 hours to get through. That's her lifestyle. And holy cow, I do not have that kind of time. I mean, functionally, her skin looked great. If it works for her and that's her passion and that's her time availability for it, and somehow she's not overdoing unnecessary ingredients that are actually harmful, then, you know, God bless, go for it. I think functionally, though, really 5 steps is probably like a realistic limit for more people. That's completely a made up number that I just pulled out of thin air. But I have a hard time imagining doing more than 5 steps at any point in my daily routine. 3 is enough.
Yeah. I don't know what you would be trying to accomplish beyond 5. I could see 5. But really beyond that, I think probably doing too much. But again, like you said, like, it's really up to you and, you know, your lifestyle. I mean, I think less is more. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see these videos, people saying like, oh, you know, my boyfriend does nothing and his skin looks better than mine. So I think a lot of times it's the function of the products that people are using and layering. They're layering too many products and doing too much. And that a lot of times is leading to a compromised skin barrier. So I think there's some truth to this, but I don't know what determines like the limit, the upper limit of normal. Because if you found like a routine, a nice cocktail that's like 7 products and it's doing phenomenally for you, I don't see any reason to take that away from you. So I always tell patients, like, you know your skin better than I do. So, you know, if it's working for you, why reinvent the wheel, right? You know, I saw this actually a lot when I first started doing content. I would have people come in and they would say things to me like, I started using the CeraVe cleanser because of your videos and now my skin is worse. I'm like, well, what were you using before? And they're like, oh, I was using, for example, like the Clinique cleanser, or I was using the Cetaphil cleanser. And I'm like, no, like, if your skin was doing great before, like, what, don't change it just because this is a product I like. It's a product a lot of my patients like, but it's not going to work well for everybody. So there's no reason, like, just if something's working well for you, like, just because you see a video that somebody says this is better, doesn't mean that it's time for you to change your routine unless you're trying to see some incremental improvement and something's not working well for you. So, and that holds true for all of the favorite products that I've ever mentioned. You know, there's no reason to change your routine if you're happy with what your skin is doing, no matter who tells you that the product is the greatest product on earth.
Love it. There's an interesting thing too. I think it was Dr. Tomasi was talking about this. Someone called him out and was like, why are you doing all these steps for your skincare routine? Are you even doing these steps yourself? And he's like, no, you know, I have my skincare routine. I'm telling you how to build a routine for X. Cause I was just thinking, I did a video on a morning and evening aging skincare, right? And I had 8 products lined up. And I was like, 8, that's kind of a lot. Even though it was 4 in the morning, 4 at night. But then I thought, that's like, you know, do I do all 4 of these? No. However, if someone's going for something for their goal, they are now equipped with these 8 steps for their skin. And so again, it's about personalizing it, finding what works for you, and then running with it.
Perfect. All right. So next up on this list is using too much of one product at any given time. Yeah, you know, I think that there's legitimacy here. You know, you don't want to, I've seen people slug with like a handful of Vaseline. It's probably too much. I've seen people apply retinoid with like a finger length of retinoid, probably too much. I've seen people apply only 1 finger length of sunscreen. I've seen, or just like, you know, dot sunscreen, you know, 2 little dots of sunscreen on the face. So there is like a correct, or not, I wouldn't say correct, but there is like a range of like how much of each product you should be using. And within that range, you're going to see good results. And so I do think that you can be over applying or under applying, specifically when it comes to like actives, like you probably only need a small amount. Whereas with sunscreen, like you definitely want more. You need enough to cover like for the face, neck, ears, you need 2 finger lengths. And that's the calculation I came up with. But beyond that, you know, I think in general, like how much cleanser you use, how much moisturizer you use, probably as much as you feel like you need.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I kind of do agree with this rule a little bit, because I do think people do over and under use perhaps indiscriminately and non-deliberately in their videos. However, I'm going to also caveat here. There's a form of artistry with video making. And so a lot of people, when they're creating these videos and they're looking at themselves, they're not actually doing it purely from a functional standpoint. they like the aesthetics of it. Like if you think the ASMR videos, you look at the people with the oil cleansing, they're like, oh, my oil cleansing, my pores are gone. Touch, touch, blot, blot, push, push. And it's like dewy and plumpy. And they're not really teaching you how much to apply. They're just liking the look, or they feel right. like they're going for a theme of hydration. I do this too in the summer. I'm like, okay, I'm going to dump this ton of hyaluronic acid on my face because in my mind, it matches the conversation about hydration, even though you don't necessarily need to use as much as I did. So I think there's a little bit of freedom because social media is a little bit of an art form. But I don't know, maybe that's the only bit of grace I'll give it there beyond what you said as well.
No, I completely agree. I mean, yeah, there is like the art of making the video, right? There is a couple of TikTok makeup creators, and I can't think of their names off the top of my head, but they'll put on a shocking amount of makeup, and it's for the views, right? Like where it's like foundation, where it's like a handful of foundation. Maybe we can find some of these videos, but it's not like they're really using that much foundation every day. It really is more for the views and the aesthetic of it. And probably the same thing is happening with skincare, where people are overusing products for the aesthetic of it, for the shock value of it. In reality, like you're probably going to accomplish a lot with a small amount. And maybe we'll do a video or an infographic of how much of each product is really like within the normal range of how much you need to be using.
That is a good idea. I like that idea a lot. See if we can make that hit this week when you're here. The next one, we're on 8. Don't worry, we're almost done, everybody. We have 3 more to go through. Touching unclean surfaces and then touching your face. This is kind of reasonable. I guess thinking my mind immediately goes to like the surgeries we do because we are kind of obsessive, even though they're not technically sterile in the office setting, they're clean surgeries. And we are very obsessive about where your hands are and when you have moved from a sterile field to a non-sterile environment. And again, though, this is kind of like the contamination with dirty fingers where it becomes like, how much does it matter? It may not matter a whole lot if you're just touching perhaps usual surfaces in and around your routine. I mean, the outside of the bottles are not clean. They're not sterile. You've touched them a million times with your hands. Other people have touched them. And so if you're even just grabbing the product to the next product, to the next product in your skincare routine, guess what? That is a very unclean surface. So actually, after I've said that, I'm going to walk back and say this actually probably matters less than I initially thought, because the bottle surfaces are just as dirty as anything else, barring your toilet seat, maybe barring your bathroom door handle. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think especially in the setting of, you know, your bathroom, you know, the products are probably not like abnormally dirty, I would say. I do make it a point, though, when I'm out, especially when I'm out like at an event and I've shook a lot of people's hands. Maybe this traces back to my OCD back in the day, but I become very aware that I shook somebody's hand. And I hold that awareness, like where it's like actively part of like what's in my brain. Like I hold it in my brain. I don't, if anyone else does this, I might be the only one
do
that
it.
Does this, and that's totally no, fine.
I do it. You make me feel better by saying this. I will not, I never touch my face again after I've shaken someone's hand ever. I'm obsessive about it.
Yeah. Like I actually, like if you shake my hand and then I move on to the next person, I'm talking to that person. Part of my concentration now is about my hand. And I think about this the entire time afterwards. So until I then wash my hands again. Right. And I'll find like the next exit to wash my hands, like whenever I can. So this is something that I carry with me. And so I won't touch my face or around my mouth if I've shook somebody's hand. So I do think there's some legitimacy to this, because I actually think that that's how I believe strongly that this is how most germs spread, is because people don't practice this behavior. Like they'll eat after shaking other people's hands and like put their hands in their mouths. And I think this is how a lot of germs spread. And I'm pretty cognizant about not touching my face after I've done anything that I feel like is abnormally, like, you know, an increased exposure to things that I'm not normally exposed to. And so, yeah, like you're never going to have like completely clean hands when you touch your face when you're doing your skincare routine. Now, if you're in New York City and you're on the subway and you stabilize yourselves by holding on one of the poles, those things are filthy. And if you touch your face, then good luck. But otherwise, I do think touching your face and your hands are dirty can make a difference. But during, in the middle of your skincare routine, I don't think it probably makes a big difference, unless you're, like you said, going to touch like a toilet seat right after, and then applying it to your face. Otherwise, I think you're in good shape.
Nice. I love it. That the only thing that I got out of that whole conversation, though, was that you do it too. I thought I was the only one who did. I literally thought I was the only one who did that. I felt bad about it. I was like, it's not that people are dirty. It's not that. It's just me. It's a me thing. But it's also a Dr. Shaw thing. So now I feel good. The last,
I'm also not normal. So like, I don't know that this is something to be proud of still, but like, I hear where you're coming from. But I am curious if like anybody else carries this with them. Because it's something that I never, ever in my lifetime have ever voiced out loud until just now. Like, I didn't even know how to put this into words. So if you resonate with this at all, like maybe there is a bigger group of people that this resonates with. I'm curious in the comments, leave something.
Yeah, my wife knows I do it. She hates that I do this, but I can't help it. I can't help it. So the last two rules on this, I think, are actually very important. So they saved the last two for best, and only 22, well, I mean, that's a significant amount of people. But number 9 is not applying sunscreen or SPF. 22% said this is their mistake. And I have to assume that this is in the context of a full skincare routine, because... Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't just, again, assume everyone's putting sunscreen on in every video. It makes no sense. So let's assume that in a complete routine, or if they're going outside, they're not using sunscreen. And of course, that we've talked about this many times, that is the cardinal sin in skincare, whether it's just for basic skin health and cancer prevention, or for any aging skincare concern, sun protection SPF is a must.
Yeah, completely agree with you. I agree with this, and I think everyone should be wearing sunscreen. Next up, last on the list here, is picking at or irritating blemishes on the skin. I've said it all the time. Popping your pimples is only going to make them worse. I completely agree with this. I don't know how they came up with this 12% number. There is something that I picked up when I was a resident and I was first training. I remember that my program director who trained me, he would come in the rooms and I would have a patient with acne, and they would have a decent amount of acne scarring afterwards. And he would look at their face and he would say, You pick at your acne, don't you? And I was always like, how's this guy a wizard? You know, just a wizard. Like, he knew, like, he could look at somebody and know, like, this person picks at their acne. I'm like, how does he have this gift? You know? And now, just, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years later, however long it's been, I can walk in a room, and even on TikTok, I can look at somebody's skin and know that they pick at their acne. It makes such a characteristic appearance. To somebody with a trained eye, you can look at somebody's acne and know that they are picking at their acne. So I don't know if whoever made this statistic here is talking about like they're watching videos where people are actively popping pimples or irritating blemishes on the skin, and that's how they came up with the 12%, or whoever did this study has the skill set to look at someone's skin and say that it's been picked at.
Yeah, who knows how they did it, but they did it. And of course, I also agree.
Do you know what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
With skin picking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's extremely characteristic. And even whether it's like a new lesion, where it's kind of an angulated, sharp, jagged pinpoint scar or excoriation, or whether it's a chronic healed scar from picked skin, it's extremely characteristic. And I'm with you. It took me a few years to pick up on it. But now that you've seen it, I cannot unsee it. And you know, every time when a person picks their skin.
Now let's move on to controversies of short form content. And we've flagged this a million times before. What does this even mean? It basically means that you take a video and you watch the video on TikTok or Instagram. And when you watch that video, there's either inaccuracies in the video because it's a short form video, or maybe they're just wrong, the person who made the video, or could be us, could be anybody. Or there are very important nuances missing from that short form content that's important for the viewer, especially if a video goes viral, to add some type of background information that's necessary in order for the content to either be actionable or fully accurate, right? And I think this is one of the challenges that, you know, you and I have always had, you more than me, in the sense of like it always bothered you, short form content not being complete enough. But it's how people consume information. So people nowadays like bite-sized snacks of information. And the challenge is in when you're trying to truncate this information as short as possible to make it as clickbaity as possible so that more people watch it, a lot of important nuances left behind, and finding that balance between getting enough information in there and making it fun enough to watch is an art on social media, and not everybody gets it right. We don't always get it right, but it is certainly a challenge for the way that people consume content nowadays.
Absolutely. We talked about this over and over and time and time again, behind the scenes even, because you're right, it's always been a struggle for me to not only perform it and like get a message off in short form concisely. Hopefully I've got a little better at that, but then also feel like
I mean,
I've
done in the sense that
justice.
you were always upset about, like, I don't like this form of content because I feel like there's more to say and there's more I'm leaving out that's important. So yeah.
Yeah. But I knew that's what you meant, but I mean, like, it's like a doctor's conundrum. I was talking to doctors at the AAD about this, who also are on social media, and a lot of them felt the same way. Not everybody does, but a lot of them felt like, how do we communicate all of the information that we know and nuance about a topic into a 15-second video? And the answer is you cannot. And so it's just a matter of, well, do you feel comfortable with what you've left out? And honestly, a part of it too is, can you find that information elsewhere? We are actually very fortunate in that we have these long form content opportunities and a YouTube channel that's done well. So we actually can provide a backbone of information where people can go to if they actually do feel like they need to know more. So if I'd like make a video about, okay, hey, you can wear vitamin C at night if you want to, and people are like, oh, no, you can't. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in their life, which, yeah, there's a real comments. But guess what? There's going to be nuance that follows. It may not be in that short video, but it lives somewhere so that you can be like, oh, okay, here's the why, and here's how you can execute on that information if you understand the why. So it is a very difficult thing to juggle. I think there's a lot of grace that needs to go all around, especially among professionals, because we're all guilty of it, and it can't be helped. We all have high level degrees and high level understanding of different topics. And on platforms where short form is king, it can never be a truly complete thought.
Right. I think the key word or the key phrase that you put in there is, what are you comfortable leaving out? And is the information, because there is a lack of nuance that just makes it so that somebody doesn't like fully understand something. And then there is the point where the lack of information is dangerous. And so I think you have to figure out like where that lack of information is dangerous. And I've always said this, like, I almost never will talk about skin conditions that look like moles that are not moles in short form content. There's a condition called seborrheic keratoses. They are these like waxy, stuck on appearance brown spots on the skin. And they're very common. If I made a video about them in short form, there would be a lot of people who would be like, I have this. And they'd be like, wow, now I know what I have and I know how to treat it. And it's a benign condition. But, you know, there are moles that can look similar, and those moles could be melanoma. And I've never felt comfortable enough to make a short form video on seborrheic keratoses where I felt like I could give people enough information that they wouldn't then think that their melanoma was a seborrheic keratosis, and that could lead to like a dangerous misdiagnosis for a viewer. And so I've intentionally not made content because I felt like it would be a disservice to the viewer to lead them down this path without enough nuance. And there are certain things where, you know, it's not as meaningful, like if you leave out nuance, right? Like the correct order to apply products, or, you know, retinol when it's exposed to light, you know, it's not very light stable. A lot of retinols are not light stable, but there are some that are, and there are many types of retinoids that are now light stable and can be used during the day if you wanted to, or were so inclined to, right? So there is like a nuance there, but is it a dangerous nuance to say, as a rule, retinol should be applied at night? Well, it's not always true. But would it be materially dangerous if somebody believed that? Probably not, right? So I think that leaving that out could be reasonable in some cases, right? So I think that, like, for me, that would be the barometer, I guess, would be, and I try to do a really good job of, like, putting in information that's relevant. But I do think, like, there is a point where nuance can get dangerous if it's not placed in there.
Oh, definitely. And that's the difficulty of the balance. Like, I think there is no complete correct answer. There are egregious oversights and can't avoid disclaimers on certain topics. So I've made a few pregnancy safe skincare videos, and sometimes I just have to throw the disclaimers in the caption because it doesn't make sense in the short conversation, but mm-hmm. they have to live somewhere sometimes. So I do agree there are certain things that cannot be missed, but it is difficult. It's a difficult art form to master, if not impossible, especially if you're a professional.
Definitely. Right. Right. What do you include? What do you not include? And I think everyone's trying to figure it out. And a lot of times, me personally, you know, I've been doing this now for 4 years. A lot of times I learn from the comments where the video fell mm-hmm. short, right? And yeah. sometimes from the comments, I determine that it's worth deleting the video, right? So sometimes I put up a video and within a few hours, like, I'll know, like, how many questions am I getting about this that it feels very incomplete? Where do I feel like people are now, like, kind of misled? And is this, like, misleading? Is it dangerous enough that I feel like, you know, this is not helpful? It's actually hurtful, right? Because, like, I think the goal of, you know, most scientific creators, and this is not true across the board, but, like, I think in general, most dermatologists, most science communicators, like, try to put out good and accurate information. So I don't think there's like a nefarious intent in anyone's content, right? And, like, you're not always going to get it right, but I think there should be the humility to say, like, what I put out there was not helpful or accurate, and it's probably worth then, you know, deleting the video, or, you know, at least commenting or changing the caption to indicate that there is a nuance here that's worth communicating to people. So, and I think you need to always have that, no matter what stage you are at in your social media or even in your professional career, to always, like, have the humility to, like, accept information from anyone. They don't have to be, like, of matching credentials or anything like that. It could be anyone that presents to you information that you can actually look at and say, hey, like, I was actually wrong, or, like, this is misleading enough that it's worth either correcting or deleting. I think that you should always, no matter where you are in your career, you should always have the ability to look at anything that you do with that lens.
Yeah, I agree. Words of wisdom.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, the nuance of short content, you'll always see it going back and forth. We try to do our best. If you ever see us put something out there that you feel like, you know, is not accurate, not complete, or not helpful, you know, just always leave us a comment and let us know. And, you know, we monitor as much as we can in comments. We can't read every comment. We try to do our best. But if enough are out there, you know, it definitely gets on our radar. So definitely let us know. We're not perfect, and we're always trying to be better. So thank you all for your grace, your kindness, your trust, and your support over the past few years. You know, you're growing with us.
Yeah, but we definitely appreciate you. It's like our natural outro, but we really do mean it. Like, we definitely appreciate everyone who's come alongside on our journey. Like, we do pay attention as best we can. We've grown. We've learned from our mistakes. We're going to make more. We used to say this a lot, actually. We used to say at the end of our videos a lot. I remember this. It was actually back in my old house, 2 houses ago. I moved, like, every year. And we used to say, we are going to make mistakes. We are absolutely going to make mistakes, and we're going to try to learn from them as we go. And we thank you for helping us, like, being gracious with us as we do this. So definitely a very important take-home lesson for us then, and it will continue to be for us always in the future.
100%. Thank you all so much, and we will see you all next week. I will probably be on the road again. No, I'll be with you in North Carolina shooting.
That's
YouTube,
right.
So we can do podcasts then.
Nice. All right. We appreciate you. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.